We are all about wide receivers this week, along with unveiling our ranking of the top 10 in football. We're discussing what the Giants should pay Odell Beckham Jr., whether the Falcons should give Julio Jones a new deal, Josh Gordon's claim that Cleveland has the best receiving core in football, and why Adam Thielen is a true number one wide receiver in Minnesota. It's all on the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Grambling. He is Andy Benoit. This is going to be a good one. This is the wide receiver show. Just a ton of news. I mean, look, people love wide receivers anyway. But lots of newsy stuff, lots of fascinating contract situations at the top. And look, we're talking about superstars here at the top of the show. We're talking guys like Odell Beckham Jr. We're talking Julio Jones. I mean, these are huge. These are sort of franchise defining type of players here in very sticky situations.
Because we're trying to decide what are they worth. And with a quarterback, it's easy because quarterbacks often, if you like your QB, you got to pay them. And what you pay them is a function of the market value. So Kirk Cousins becomes the highest paid guy. Then when somebody else gets paid, the next one, before Cousins, it was Garoppolo. Whoever's in Matt Ryan. Now it's just a matter of recency. It's not quite as true with wide receivers. And that's what makes it difficult. And then in Beckham's case, he might want to try to get in that quarterback discussion in terms of numbers, and that makes it really difficult.
Yeah. Well, we'll have our unveiling of the top 10 receivers in the NFL, and obviously the first couple guys we're going to discuss there are going to be on the countdown as well. But we're starting with the big topics here, and we're starting with the contract situations of these two superstars. Let's start with Odell Beckham Jr. To me, this is utterly fascinating. When Ben McAdoo, when the Giants were running that, 11 personnel all the time, and they wanted to go a little bit faster and no huddle, and then they just wanted their guys to go out and beat the guy in front of them, and really Beckham was the only guy in the building who could do that the last couple of years, he was indispensable. He really was as valuable as really some quarterbacks are to their offenses as far as what the Giants needed from him. Now you have Pat Shurmur, who, I mean, look, he can scheme guys open a little bit more. Odell Beckham Jr., certainly, if you're projecting forward for the next 5 years, I think you'd take him over any receiver in football. But he's not as absolutely crucial and essential in theory to what the Giants will be under Pat Shurmur. And then on top of that, you factor in Saquon Barkley. You factor in the fact that Evan Engram figures to get better in year two, and he gives you something of a chess piece there. Odell certainly wants to, and I think rightfully so, wants to be the highest paid non-quarterback in football. Should the Giants do it, or should they say, we're going to invest in other spots? We have a scheme that can win without relying on Odell Beckham Jr. to be superhuman, and that's the way we're going to approach this.
I understand. I'm the guy that's always talking about the scheme and, well, this can actually work, and if you do that and you don't need this. I mean, I promote coaches more than players. That's my tendency. I'm not about to say that Odell Beckham Jr. isn't worth re-signing because the scheme can handle. I mean, there's a handful of guys that define the scheme, and there are a handful of those of guys, so not even a handful, a small portion of that handful that transcend the scheme, and Beckham would be a scheme transcendent player. Shurmur had Diggs and Thielen last year, too. That's what helped get him.
Yes.
He was designing stuff. He's designing stuff with two guys who will probably be in our top 10 or certainly in the discussion. So let's not think it's all just manufactured offense. It doesn't work that way.
Yes, but if you are also the Giants, and look, my stance is you pay Odell Beckham Jr. You figure out the right number, and you make it happen. If he wants basically quarterback money, let's say, he's not getting Kirk Cousins money, but he wants sort of certainly the highest paid non-quarterback in football. You just brought in Saquon Barkley. You just brought in Evan Engram. You can certainly survive without Odell Beckham Jr. in a way that you couldn't have a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Do you consider it? Do you at least consider it? Should people be out with the pitchforks outside of MetLife Stadium if they don't make this deal happen?
The counter argument is you just brought those guys. You just brought in Barkley and Ingram, so they're on their cheap rookie deals. So you do. This is a good opportunity
now
to
window.
Re-sign Beckham. Let's never avoid a good problem to have. The reason you have this problem is because Beckham, he should be the highest paid non-quarterback in the NFL, at least offensively. I mean, who if you're not going to make Beckham the highest paid, the problem is my guess is he might want to be paid better than some of the upper tier QB. If Kirk Cousins is $30 million a year, does Odell Beckham ask for $25 million? I bet he does. $25 million a year? And is he worth that? There's what you're arguing is should he be paid, what is he, $20 million a year would probably make him the highest paid non-QB in the NFL. I think that's a no-brainer. I mean, if it's not Beckham, then who? It's not going to be a running back. It's not going to be an offensive lineman. So who's going to get that money? Beckham is the most valuable non-QB offensive player. Is he more valuable than a top 12 to 15 QB like Cousins?
All right. That was
no,
more...
No. Not all right. I'm asking you.
Oh, is he more...
This is what we have to answer. What is he worth on an annual basis?
I think he's low 20s. I think he's somewhere in the 20 to 22 range.
I'd go up to 25 on him.
Yeah?
It's easy for me to sit here and say this. I've got overthecap.com up, so I'm looking at the Giants contract situations, but I'm sure that doesn't give me all the info the way Dave Gettleman, their GM, has to interpret it. And it's over many years. I get that. But if you're not going to pay – if the Giants don't pay Beckham and they let him – let's say they let him walk, which I don't think that would happen. It will not happen. But let's say he hit the open market. Who's paying him what? What's he getting?
Yeah, I mean, that's the... I had said a year ago, the Browns... A year ago. It seems like a year ago. I said at the beginning of the offseason, the Browns should make a run at him, try and pair him with Gordon and Landry out there with all the cap room they have, front load that deal basically put together, and we're actually going to talk about that, Browns and Josh Gordon's claim that they're the best receiving core in football. But, what are people going to pay a receiver on the open market? Do you break the bank for – I guess it would have to be a team with a quarterback on a cheap deal. So you're talking about a rookie quarterback. So I guess you got five teams out there right now who could do that over a four-year deal for Beckham. So – yeah, he probably does get $25 million on the open market. If you're Beckham, do you hardline this? Do you basically say, "Yeah, I think I will hit the free agent market"?
Well, he can't, because if they franchise him, what's he going to do then?
They can franchise tag him. Yeah, that's no fun.
That takes all the fun out of this. He sit out? And the other thing is, the only guy I can remember who actually sat out a season out of a contract dispute was Sean Gilbert. Years ago, defensive lineman.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if anyone sat out an entire season since then, and no one off the top of my head comes to mind here. But
so
I think it's interesting.
The players
I just
don't have the leverage. It seems like they do, but they don't. Beckham does still need the Giants more than the Giants need Beckham.
Well, you got to get one of those Nate Solder deals where you can't franchise tag the guy. That's what he needs. Sign a straight up 3-year deal.
Well, it's hard to do that coming in on your first contract.
Yeah. And then
CBA doesn't allow that.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. Does this CBA,
I'm talking now, if you're Odell Beckham Jr., sign relatively short term on the next one and then get your monster deal on your third contract.
Yeah. The issue with that, as a wide receiver, because I know Kirk Cousins did that because he has a chance at a bigger contract. The issue with that is wide receivers are dependent on factors outside of them. Someone still has to throw you the ball. Someone has to design plays for you. With a quarterback, you have the ball. So your value is inherently built in. So to bet on yourself as a receiver is a bigger gamble just because if teams double and triple team you. I mean, we're simplifying it, but you're reliant on other factors to be productive as a wide receiver. You're more reliant than you are as a QB. You can't build around your QB. So I don't think you want to bet on yourself the same way. I think it's a bigger gamble if you do.
All right. I just think it got a lot more interesting with this negotiation from the Giants' perspective once they moved on from Ben McAdoo, which might have been a little bit overdue anyway. But
I do too, because the McAdoo scheme was more reliant on Beckham than any scheme probably will ever be. That scheme asks wide receivers to win and therefore basically carry the offense, with the quarterback, of course, having a big role in that.
Yeah.
Yes, you're right, but Pat Shurmur's scheme will not look as good with Odell Beckham out.
Yeah. Well, let's go on to Julio Jones, who's kind of where Odell Beckham Jr. will probably be in 3 or 4 years at the end of his next contract. Julio, he sat out the mandatory minicamp, and you know, we'll see what happens this summer. But there's no guaranteed money left on that deal. He wants a new deal. We're going to cue this up with a clip from a podcast we like. This is Locked On Falcons podcast. I believe we are hearing the voice of Aaron Freeman, if I'm correct here.
Unlike Antonio Brown, who's going to be age 29 going into the final year of his contract, Julio, he'll be 31. That's a little bit different. I've said before on this podcast that Julio could have maybe only two more peak seasons left where he's in consideration for being one of the best receivers in the league. The Falcons are going to have, you know, 2 years into Calvin Ridley's career, looking at that situation, and maybe at that point in time, come 2020, the team is going to be willing to sort of pass the torch to Calvin Ridley as opposed to giving Julio a brand new deal.
So I guess kind of the question here is, and look, Julio has been, you know, he's been fantastic. He's gotten better over the last couple of years. He's 29 right now. So if you're talking about a new deal, you're going to take him into his early/mid-30s. How do you expect Julio Jones to age?
I think he'll age well, because he's become a very mechanically, fundamentally refined player. And not that this is what you pay a wide receiver on, but kind of think about Larry Fitzgerald and his blocking. And
yeah,
Fitzgerald's the poster child for aging great. I think he's gotten better as he's gotten slower. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could, I don't think that's true, but you could argue that and have a legitimate conversation there. Julio's a very good blocker, and that's kind of indicative of a guy who pays attention to the details of the game. Reggie Wayne became a very good blocker late in his career. He aged well. Hines Ward as well. I'm not saying, well, he's going to age and be a good blocker, so you pay him. I'm saying it's symptomatic of a guy that does all the other little things. If he learned blocking, he also learned the details of route running. Certainly, you're not going to learn blocking and not learn catching the ball as a receiver. He's set up to age very well based on the way his game has progressed and the little things that he's good at now.
You know, when he was out, and look, the other thing with Julio to discuss, I mean, he was a little bit injury prone earlier in his career. That really hasn't been the case recently. He missed two games in 2016, but he has, he's been around all year the last couple of years, 2017, 2015. In Kyle Shanahan's last year there in 2016, they actually had a couple of really good games where Julio was not in the lineup. If you're the Falcons, and again, this isn't going to happen. They're not going to cut or trade Julio Jones or anything in the near future. But do they have a setup now under Steve Sarkisian in year two where they could get by without Julio Jones, or maybe even if they're a little bit concerned about Julio missing a couple games this year, are they in a position where they can make it work without him?
Sure, especially if they expand their two running back personnel packages and use Freeman and Coleman on the field together and become a hard offense to defend, because both of those guys are elite ball carriers as well. So that would be a real problem for defense. I think they need to be putting them on the field together for 15 to 20 snaps a game. So, yeah, they could survive, and they added Calvin Ridley. We don't know what he'll be in the NFL, but he's a first-round pick. So the answer is yes, but that's the simple short answer. The more significant answer is that this team's Super Bowl window is spot here right now. It's as open as it will be. It'll probably be open a little bit longer, but that's the point of all this. Let's not lose sight. It's not about building a great program for many years. You'd like to do that, but you'd like to do that because that gives you a chance to win the Super Bowl. Well, they've got that chance to win the Super Bowl. Here they are. So I think you do whatever you can to maximize. I'm in the John Elway belief. You do whatever you can to maximize your Super Bowl window while it's open. And Atlanta's is open right now, and they need to get Julio Jones as much money as they can get him, or as much, or I guess, as little money as they can get him that he's willing to play for over these next 3 years, and then figure it out when they get to 2021.
So you and I already know what you think about this because you wrote about it in your deep dive column last week. But you think they should just get this done? They should just give him the market-setting contract. And maybe for their sake, they should do it before Odell Beckham Jr. signs his.
Yeah, bro, that's a great point. If they're going to pay him, and I do think they should, although the reason I wanted to play Aaron's clip from the podcast there, he does make an interesting – I hadn't thought about it the way he presented it that way. He does make an interesting point is Julio is going to be much older. How do you let's think about this, because Aaron's point is, well, what basically he's asking, how do you structure it if you do give Julio a contract? Would you offer him, if you're the Falcons, and would you take this, if you're Julio, a 2 to 3 year mega deal?
Yeah, I mean, look, I kind of default to every mega deal is a 3 year deal anyway, because that's where they put all the guarantees. That's what happened with his last contract. That seems to be what happens with every contract. So I think you sort of just, you know, you take what you gave them last time and you sort of prorate it for what the going rate is right now for the top receivers, and that's how you do it. And essentially it becomes a 3 year extension.
Yeah, and then the reason these teams tack on other years, there's two of them. One is it gives them a good option to keep the player on a friendlier price sometimes, which is what the Falcons have now, although they're finding that Julio is not going to play for that friendlier price, and so you have the holdout situation. But two, it gives you more years to prorate the signing bonus over, or some of that bonus money, so it has salary cap implications. So the three-year deal versus a 5 or 6 year deal, it's an accounting move by the team. Yeah. So, yes, we probably should be looking at all of these contracts in terms of 3 years. And if that's the case, then is Julio Jones going to be worth top dollar for the next 3 years? The safe bet there would be yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with that. And then it's just a, you know, obviously they lost some flexibility with Matt Ryan having to get his contract. But, yeah, I you know, I'm in the same boat as you on this. I think they have to get it done, and you know, I think basically guarantee those first 3 years, and that that should do it.
It's easy again, though. It's easy for us to sit here and say this. Thomas Dimitroff has to think about 52 other players' contracts ultimately, and sometimes you have to think about your coaching staff's contracts, because ownership has to pay for some of this bonus money, and they have to have the cash on hand. I mean, there are a lot of factors. We are touching on 5 to 10% of the factors that Thomas Dimitroff, their GM in Atlanta, has to deal with. So I say you pay them, but you got to figure out how still. But it money should not be an enormous object. Julio's transcendent as well, borderline transcendent. He's in that – he's in the 10 to 12 players in the league who changes the makeup of his team when he's on the field.
Andy, I have to ask you the fantasy dork question that I ask you every year. Why doesn't he catch touchdowns? He has. I'm just gonna put this out there. Last 4 years, red zone touchdowns. Julio Jones has 10. That is outside the top 50. That ties him for 54th. He's tied with the likes of Danny Amendola and Richard Rodgers. He's behind Anquan Boldin, who only played 3 seasons in that span, and Dante Moncrief, my personal favorite player in the NFL, as we covered during free agency. He doesn't get red zone touchdowns. It's it's fairly baffling. And I guess outside of the, you know, we talk about the fantasy dorkdom because that's really who wants to know this, but it kind of had some real life implications in the playoff game when they had to get that touchdown in Philadelphia at the end of the game and kind of ended up with a sort of, you know, not terribly well designed or well executed play that ended with a broken up pass on the sideline of the end zone there.
I think, yeah, and Julio slipped on the play, and that was my issue with the design. I went back and forth with Brian Searns, Atlanta's PR guy, on Twitter, actually, about this. It was all amicable. It was not hostile, but I didn't love that play design because Julio was basically the only option. And Brian Searns' point, which is totally valid, was I'll take Julio Jones one-on-one any day. That's what the play ultimately got, and I agreed with him, but my issue was you could have gotten to that one-on-one without making it the only option because if something happens and Julio slips like he did, that's what then your season ends. So, but that's I get what you're saying. Yeah, Julio Jones is not a productive red zone guy. Keyshawn Johnson, we used to have this discussion about him in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. Keyshawn is not the talent that Julio is. The only thing I can think of that it might be is one, I'm sure he attracts extra attention in the red zone whenever possible. He is good on back shoulder stuff and contested catches, but that's not necessarily his game. They don't draw that up for him the way the Packers have with Jordy Nelson, who is always among the league leaders in touchdowns. A lot of Julio's best stuff within the designs of Atlanta's offense come on in-breaking routes, which attack the middle of the field. In the red zone, about 90% of the passes wind up at the pylon. You throw to the front pylon or the back pylon. So inherently, Jones's role in the red zone is not the same in terms of impact as it would be in the field. That can be, I think that's part of it right there. So figure that is good for two or three touchdowns a year, maybe. Then let's say there's just some coincidental things, one or two touchdowns here or there. Now he's got three or four more touchdowns a year, and we're probably not having the conversation. We're not saying he's a red zone dynamo, but we're not really noticing what he does in the red zone or not. It's such a small sample size, these touchdowns. He could play very similarly this year as he did the last few years and have 10 or 12 touchdowns. I mean, it's a small deal, but it's not to be dismissed. You've said it's gone over several years now. He has not been uber productive in the red zone. So I do think it's real. I just think it's finicky and real.
Yeah. Well, and it's something everyone notices because, you know, some people just follow football by watching the Red Zone channel and checking their fantasy lineup every week. But
and that's fair. Just here's this to know about Julio Jones, by the way. The thing I'll say, unless you've got something to add, is every time I've been around a coach talking about installing wide receiver techniques or plays or route running, whenever a coach is teaching wide receiver stuff, anytime a name is brought up as far as this is how so-and-so does it, that name is almost always Julio Jones. I bet you if you polled NFL coaches, he would be a pretty far and away number one, even ahead of Antonio Brown, who I love and there's no reason not to love. I think Julio's the most regarded, highest regarded wideout within the NFL.
All right. Well, we're gonna talk about a couple of revamped receiving cores, but before we move on, just real quick here. You know, a lot of men struggle with shaving, from ingrown hairs to razor burn to just overall skin irritation. It's a painful chore that most men don't enjoy. Now there's a razor that takes the pain out of shaving and makes it an enjoyable experience that you'll actually look forward to. It's called One Blade. I mean, I'm a guy who always use the cheap disposable razors. I get the really thick facial hair, and it just doesn't work. I was down to shaving like once every 2 weeks, and it's not something I can do. I got to be clean shaven to look presentable. I'm back to shaving every day, and it's thanks to One Blade. One Blade will give you the best shave of your life with no razor burn or ingrown hairs. It's been obsessively engineered to be the optimal tool for performance shaving, from the perfect pivot and weight to the finest materials such as ultra high grade German stainless steel. This is an heirloom quality razor that you can pass down for generations. Each one is hand assembled and serial numbered, and every One Blade is backed by a full 60-day money-back guarantee and a lifetime warranty. So if you're ready to have the best shave of your life, visit onebladeshave.com/10things. That's 10things. Try it Give it some time, and if it isn't the best shave of your life, simply return it. Visit onebladeshave.com/10things. That's 10things. All right. Josh Gordon said that the Browns have the best wide receiving core in the NFL, or some to that effect. That's basically what he said. Let's just say Josh Gordon is going to play 16 games this year. They added Jarvis Landry. You have Corey Coleman, Antonio Callaway, who is probably the best pure talent at receiver in this year's draft, who fell to round four because of all the off the field stuff. There's certainly raw talent there. I mean, does he have a point? Can this be, if everything goes right, the best wide receiving core in the NFL?
I guess, but the size of that if is about 10 stories tall.
Yeah. Well, what about Josh Gordon right now? I mean, he came back late last year. He has said his life is straightened out. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt right now. Even if you read Ben Baskin's piece on him last year for SI, that you might not give him the benefit of the doubt, but let's give him the benefit of the doubt because it's still been a couple months since then. Is Josh Gordon? I mean, he'd probably be maybe not top five, but you'd certainly have to consider him in the top five receivers in the NFL when he is actually on the field and playing.
Well, talent-wise, 6'3", 225, fast, long, does the little things right as an athlete. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, sure. It's just he's been so sporadic. We're in the nascent stages of reevaluating him. So, and he was gone for so long and for such unfortunate reasons that I don't even think about him yet. I'll believe it when I see it kind of deal, which we've started to see it, I guess. But I don't love the rest of the receiving core. Let's talk to if it all goes well, yeah, Jarvis Landry, great swing type of receiver. Corey mm-hmm. Coleman was a first-round pick. Gordon, you like Antonio Callaway's talent. I get what he's saying. Landry's here because the Dolphins didn't think he was a very refined player. They would have held on to him if they did. Mm-hmm. They didn't think he was reliably refined. He's capable of it, but he's not reliable in it. So let's call that an undisciplined receiver in the loosest phrase. Josh Gordon and discipline probably don't go hand in hand innately when you think about mm-hmm. it. Corey Coleman has not developed very much, if at all, and part of that is coming from Baylor. Those guys mm-hmm. are taught a lot of bad habits, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
there are people in the league that have now said, we're not going to draft any Baylor guys. It's just too much. We can't. They're too raw when they come in. They can't mm-hmm. play. So that's the receiving core we're talking about. I'm not going to say that group's potentially better than Pittsburgh with Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster. I might not even say it's better than Cincinnati when you have Brandon LaFell, the ultimate professional, the antithetical Brown, playing opposite of A.J. Green plus speedster John Ross, who's got every bit as much potential as any of these guys in Cleveland have. If I had to rank them now, if I'm a betting man, I'm betting Pittsburgh finishes as the best receiving core in the division, and I'm taking Cincinnati as number two and Cleveland as number three.
And when you say antithetical Brown for Brandon LaFell, you are antithetical Cleveland Brown, not antithetical Antonio Brown, just to clarify.
Thank you. Yes, the antithetical Cleveland. In other words, Brandon LaFell is a coach's dream. He does mm-hmm. every little thing right, and there'll be time. And he is so selfless. When you watch him on film and you're learning play designs and entire mm-hmm. packages, you gain an enormous. That's why he's one of these guys that's always getting into the lineup. I mean, his whole career, someone's tried to replace him. They move on from him and goes to a different team. He winds up yep. becoming a contributing solid number two, no matter how it goes. Brandon LaFell is an extremely good, solid football player.
Let's talk Raiders. This is another team. I mean, they made wholesale changes for Gruden here. What's your gut feeling about this receiving core at this point? Amari Cooper, that's the holdover, and then you have Jordy Nelson, who the Packers kind of probably thought was done, and Martavis Bryant, who the Steelers were certainly done with. with all the drama surrounding him. Well, how do you feel about that, Andy? What does your heart tell you?
My heart tells me this: they're in the Cleveland Browns camp. A lot of ifs here, and their ifs are kind of in the other direction. Martavis Bryant, I would not bet on because of the availability and the reasons he's been unavailable. I think Jordy Nelson's clearly in decline. And Amari Cooper, about a year and a half ago, defenses realized he doesn't get off press coverage very well. Once he's into his route, he's as good as anyone. He is very quick, very nuanced and subtle in the way he runs his routes, which is an important trait. But you remove that if you jam him and take his timing away, and that's what teams have done. He struggled against press coverage, and you've seen the inconsistencies ensue, and then he also doesn't always hold on to the ball, which is always a hard one to evaluate, isn't it? Remember how much Terrell Owens used to drop passes? I mean, some guys just aren't innate catchers, and I guess that should matter at wide receiver. It's kind of the nature of the job.
It does matter, but you know what? It's one of those things where anyone, if you know very little about football, you understand that a guy dropping a ball that hits him in the hands, that's bad. That's not ideal. So you might not understand, like, oh, this guy can't get open. This guy can't do this. It was the same thing during draft season. How much did you hear about, drop pass percentage? And people tried to argue, well, Josh Allen's receivers actually weren't that bad because look at their drop pass percentage. It wasn't that high. And I don't want to get into defense of Josh Allen because I'm not a Josh Allen defender. But the guys can't get open. Getting open is a big part of it. When you look at drop passes, it's on TV, it's happening, and you just kind of say, oh, he dropped that pass. Boy, he blew that one.
Yeah, it's easy to analyze a drop pass. It's very easy to analyze a drop pass. What's hard is to understand what does that mean? Do we assume he'll never catch pass? I mean, how do you – Amari, you're dropping the pass because you're wide open. That's when it looks worse. To football people – what they generally see from that generally is, hey, he was wide open. He got wide open. We're going to assume he'll catch the pass next time. That's why he's in. You wouldn't have played this long and gotten this far if you weren't capable of catching passes. But there's no question. Amari Cooper has not been a reliable pass catcher the last 2 years either, in addition to some of the route running struggles against press coverage.
I actually didn't think they were going to exercise his fifth-year option.
I wasn't completely sold either on that,
He's a little bit pricier since he was the number four pick, but that's a thing. I mean, is he essentially their slot receiver now? I mean, is that how you do it? We talked a little bit about this. Is Nelson your slot guy, or is Cooper your slot guy, or are you just, whatever, you're just rotating him.
Cooper might be one of those guys who's more valuable as a number two than as a number one. Because if you're a number two, you're still going to get press coverage. If that's how to beat you, teams will do that. But there's a difference between getting press coverage from an Adam Jones type of cornerback versus a Tremaine Johnson type of traveling press corner, or an Xavier Rhodes, or whoever Cooper might fan. It's Chris Harris in this case, since he's in the AFC West. There's a difference. And if Cooper's facing number two corners, he might be a 1,200-yard type of receiver. But against number one corners, he's been very up and down lately.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into the top 10 receivers in the NFL, the unveiling of our rankings. So if you're listening to us for the first time, which people actually might be for the wide receiver show, this is sort of it's a popular show when we do it every year. But the way we do this AP poll style, it is myself, it is Andy Benoit, it is our researcher that week. This week that is Colin Bowers. We all cast our top 15. If you get a first place vote, you get 15 points. Second place vote, 14 points. Down to 15th place vote gets 1 point. And then Andy's vote counts double because we like him that much. We will start. Let's see. We had 19 guys get votes. We're going to start with the others receiving votes. So this would indeed start with number 11. Stephon Diggs, T.Y. Hilton, Tyreek Hill, Larry Fitzgerald, Alshon Jeffrey, Amari Cooper, Doug Baldwin, Josh Gordon, Davante Adams. I don't know. I'm looking at the top 10. I don't have an issue with anyone who made the top 10. I think there's some good receivers in this league, and that's what we played out. Anyone stick out to you in the other receiving vote? I wish Larry Fitzgerald had made our last top 10. What might be his last top 10, I should say.
But he is not going to leave the league underappreciated at all. I think people respect Larry. I'm fine with Larry Fitzgerald. He's not a top 10 receiver right now.
Does he leave our position rankings podcast series as underappreciated, though?
He might, and he'll get over that. Did you read Peter King's thing, or did Peter ever tell you the story about Larry Fitzgerald at St. Andrews?
He did. I don't remember it, though. Tell it. Yeah, I mean, you're going to have to tell it anyway, so.
I am now. It's amazing. Yes. You don't remember the Peter King story, because he tells them dramatically, at a slow pace, and many times
over the years.
There are, yeah. But this is why I'll never golf again. I had a similar experience with Patrick Peterson. Basically, these guys, these super athletes, these world-class athletes, they pick up a golf club and all of a sudden play like they're on the PGA Tour. Larry Fitzgerald, in his third year of golfing, played St. Andrews. Peter walked the course with them, and through 12 holes, Fitzgerald was under par. St. Andrews. Under par. Now, he wound up kind of choking it away the last six holes. But listen, that's the point is, I mean, he can pick up a golf club and all of a sudden he's just great. Golf takes a lot of athleticism. It's not required, but it separates guys pretty quickly in golf. I would just pick, it's an expensive way to get mad and waste daylight hours, in my opinion. And it'll stay that way for me because I am not the kind of athlete that can just pick something up. And the fact that those guys exist, what's the point of us even trying?
No, I've been to the driving range once in my 8 years living in the suburbs, and I just don't want to go back. But you're right, you don't have to run fast in golf, and you don't have to overpower people and stuff like that, but it does. And we kind of saw when not to make this a golf podcast, but like when Tiger came around, and Tiger was an athlete, and it was kind of like, oh, like this is what it means to, you know, you can develop those skills so much easier. It's skill heavy, but you can develop those skills so much easier if you have the natural flexibility and core strength and coordination and motor skills and all that stuff that translates into other sports. But anyways,
Fitzgerald's a better receiver than he is golfer. Maybe that's the way we put a bow on that and work into the top 10 guys here.
There you go. Top 10. Let's see. We got Michael Thomas at 10, Brandon Cooks at 9, Adam Thielen at 8. So a couple of Vikings in the top 11 here. Let's go to a clip. This is from the Purple Podcast from 1500 ESPN Twin Cities, one of our favorites here. They're going to talk some Adam Thielen.
If we were to redraft every wide receiver in the NFL right now, how many would you have to go through before you got to Adam Thielen?
Well, I would take Antonio Brown. I would take Julio Jones. I would also probably take AJ Green, Keenan Allen. He would probably be to that range of where I'm getting to Adam Thielen after those guys. I mean,
sure.
The thing with all of these guys is they're mostly unguardable. It's just what is the ceiling for them? Can they completely take over a game? I mean, I think Thielen benefits a lot from having Stephon Diggs. That's not to take away from him.
Well, like I said, we have two Vikings in the top 11. Is what Thielen does, how linked is that to what Stephon Diggs does being on the field at the same time as him?
Yeah, that's why I wanted to use that clip. I thought the Thielen analysis I was spot on. I agree with it completely. And until they get to the Diggs part, when you put on the film last year, what was evident and why my view of the Vikings offense shifted and I loved Thielen more was Diggs was benefiting more from Thielen than vice versa. Defenses unequivocally treated Adam Thielen as the number one receiver by the second half of last season, not Stephon Diggs. We're splitting hairs, especially, and it was a different offense under Pat Shurmur, but John DeFilippo, their new coordinator, he's smart. He'll put that film on and see what they did and continue it. The way they use those guys, they're very interchangeable, so they both benefit from each other. But just to clarify, Thielen's, without question, the number one receiver in that offense. Diggs is the number two, and they're both very good receivers. And I bet those guys from the Purple Podcast would agree, because they were when he said that I would put Thielen around the Keenan Allen class, top four, top five is where he's putting them basically. I agree with the Allen assessment. I agree with the Thielen assessment. He didn't say I'm putting Diggs up there with Antonio Brown or anything. So they probably realize in Minnesota, too, Thielen's become a really good player. And it's not just that he's a refined route runner, which he is. He's fast. He looks fast. And let's be honest there. In fact, I've had coaches tell me a white wide receiver with speed can be very dangerous because nobody, you just don't think they're fast. You think they're all going to be Cole Beasley types, and there's some real value to that when you find fast ones because they surprise people. Hate that that's politically incorrect, but I've heard that many times.
He's also a look. He's bigger. I think he's bigger than a lot of people realize. He's like 6'2", 6'3", something like that. I mean, he is a good physical package there.
His agent went to him a few years ago and said, hey, I would recommend delaying your contract. This is like before. This is when Thielen was a barely on the roster type of guy. Mm-hmm. He said, I want you to know, I would recommend delaying your contract for as long as possible because I think you're going to get better over time. And that's exactly how it went. In fact, if anything, Thielen didn't delay it enough because he signed his big deal right before last season, where last year, I believe, he got all pro votes. I don't think he quite made it. But he was a top five wide receiver in the NFL last year.
Yeah. Back to the countdown here. We have A.J. Green at 7, Keenan Allen at 6, Mike Evans at 5, and DeAndre Hopkins at 4. Have you gotten a little bit are you buying into DeAndre Hopkins a little bit more after last season?
Yes, I am. In fact, I was going to ask you that. I wanted to get your opinion on this. First of all, I want to touch on Green. He's dropped on my rankings. He dropped on our rankings here. Mm-hmm. I think he's involved in too many negative plays. And frankly, I thought there were some effort issues at times. I'm not saying he's an effort guy, but I think he's an emotional player, and that has been a negative on the Bengals offense at times more than you'd like. He's still a tremendous talent, and I think he should be held to a top three standard because he's capable of that at any moment.
Yeah.
But I'm moving Hopkins up and Green down in my mind. I have not loved DeAndre Hopkins over the years because I don't think he's not quick. He's not fast. He's not twitchy, and he's not necessarily refined. He is not a precise route runner. There are some things he does incorrectly that don't show up on TV or in the stat book but are evident on film. So that's what he's not, and that's what I focused on. But goodness sakes, whenever you watch a tech, I mean, he makes the plays. He does it anyway. He is the best contested catch receiver I have ever seen. I said that on Twitter a few months ago, and people got on me, and they said, well, what about Calvin Johnson? What about Julio Jones? I'm talking about just the art of the contested catch. Yeah, there are some guys who are bigger, faster, stronger than him, and they'll make contested catches because of that. But his ability to catch balls that his body and physical abilities say he shouldn't catch, it's the best I've ever seen. He is a productive, talented player in a unique way. It just took me a while to reconcile it. And he's gotten better, too. Let's not overlook that.
Yeah. At 6, we had Keenan Allen. You were just hanging out with the Chargers for a little bit. And as you know, for like the third straight week, I'm wearing my San Diego Chargers Kmart T-shirt. I don't know why I don't wear this T-shirt on Friday. But yeah.
Well, that's the kind of shirt you wear when you're out of clothes. So you probably do your laundry on the weekend like a lot of us, I'm guessing.
I don't know. I have a million T-shirts. I don't know why I keep on going back to this one. But Keenan Allen, you were just hanging out with the Chargers. Do you have a newfound appreciation for Keenan Allen? Not that you didn't appreciate him before.
Not a newfound one. Phillip Rivers said Keenan Allen is so good on these in-breaking routes, and I've always thought he said that before I said anything about Allen, because I'm going to sit there and let Rivers do the talking, of course. And I've always thought, at least always being the last 2 years, and especially last season, that Allen is the best in-breaking route runner from a mechanical standpoint in the NFL. I mean, Julio's the hardest to defend on in-breaking routes, but for executing them and setting up the breaks, I think Keenan Allen's the best. I need to tell you, by the way, and I want to get your opinion on this, Gary, about I've asked friends, and I've had mixed reviews on how I handled this. I saw DeAndre back to Hopkins real quick. I saw him in the airport coming back from the Super Bowl in Minneapolis.
Yep.
His gate was right next to my gate. He's flying to Houston. I'm flying back to Boise. I wanted to introduce myself, and I wanted to tell him how much I admired his season last year. So I said, hey, I am Andy Benoit. I was one of the all-pro voters. I was really happy to see that you made the team. I was thrilled. You're a tremendous contested catch artist. And he lit up. He really is. He was warned by that. I was pleasantly pleased with myself.
Yeah.
Now, here was the tricky part. I didn't vote for him.
Yeah.
I voted for Antonio Brown and Adam Thielen. But I didn't want to go up to him and say, hey, you know, hey, yeah, I voted. I didn't quite vote for you, but I liked you. You were close. I really like you a lot. You know, and so I just thought, all right, what can I say that's true and genuine? So I said, hey, I'm Andy Benoit. I was one of the voters, and I was very happy you made it. Now, he did thank me for my vote as we were parting ways, but I didn't feel like I needed to say anything. You know, he maybe misunderstood. Did I do something wrong?
As you're hopping into one of those airport carts, you yell back, I didn't vote for you. Yeah,
I did was the right way to handle it. But I've had friends say that was misleading. You basically lied to the guy. You went up and told him you voted for him when you didn't. And I
agree,
don't think I did.
You're really because if you explain it, then you're really getting into sort of the absurdity of splitting hairs. Like, oh well, I consider you third because if you do get look at this list. I mean, what we have them four. Everyone knows the three guys are going to be top three here. It's Julio, it's Antonio Brown, so Odell Beckham Jr. So you know we have them four on this list. It's like.
Four is pretty good.
You're in the top tier. I mean, that's you're splitting hairs between these guys. I mean, you know, if it was, I think it's fine.
I wanted to compliment him. Yeah, well, and keep in mind as well, he's just sitting there, and I'm walking back to him. It's an airport, and we're total strangers. So
yes.
To go up and explain myself would have been weird. I wanted to say something in passing. I figured this exchange has to last 30 seconds. I'm not coming here to – if he wants to sit and talk, that'd be great. But it's a quick hello. I mean, so it would have been weird to explain – why I like you, but I didn't vote for you versus just I was happy you made it, which I was happy.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I was happy he made it because he did deserve it.
Yes.
I thought I did. I was pretty proud of it, but I had some negative feedback later from people.
No, I don't. If you had sat there for 20 minutes with him, then it would have been like, you should have brought that up at some point. But yeah.
Right. But you're right. But I left before I could clarify. Otherwise, you're right. I had no, he didn't give me a chance to tell him the full truth.
Yeah, and do you have anything else on Allen or on Evans? We talked about AJ Green there before we unveil the top three.
These top eight wide receivers are probably the strongest of top eight of any show we'll do on the podcast series here. These top 10 podcast position groups that we're doing, don't you think? Maybe QBs are 1 through 8. Any of these wide receivers are true bona fide number ones, which really changes the way you structure your offense and the coverages you receive.
No, I'll say that's fair. I thought safeties were really deep. I don't have the safeties list in front of me though, so I don't know what the tier one cutoff was there, but I'll go with that. Even if it's a hot take, I'll go with that. Top three, not really surprising here. I guess the order would be something of a surprise. It's Odell Beckham Jr.'s third, Julio Jones at two, and Antonio Brown is at number one here. The only thing I'll mention on Antonio Brown, obviously we just talked a ton about Julio and Odell. That Jaguars game, that divisional round Jaguars game where Antonio Brown was probably at like 75% maybe if you're going to put a percentage on it with the calf problem. I just thought that was exceptional and not that I didn't appreciate Antonio Brown before, but just the way he was able to create at the very last moment separation on some of those big plays in that game where they hung 40-something points on that Jaguars defense. I thought that was just exceptional, and it kind of made me think maybe Antonio Brown's going to play into like his mid-30s as opposed to, you know, if you just look at him as like, oh, well, he's fast and quick and, you know, that'll go away and then he'll be a number three slot guy by age 33 or something like that.
He does so many little things masterfully. Let's not forget, we say, what was he? He's a sixth-round pick, correct?
Yep.
So we say, oh, he's a sixth-round pick, and now he's overachieved. Let's think about what that means. If you're a sixth-round pick, it doesn't mean 32 teams missed on you time and time again. It means that you did not display the physical attributes that people associate with stardom entering the NFL, which means you don't have some of those physical attributes. So how do you play? It doesn't mean you can't play, but now how do you play? If you're not big like Julio Jones, if you're not a long strider like A.J. Green or a Mike Evans, if you're not lanky like Mike Evans, how do you play? What do you do? Now, Brown does have the quickness, and he's gotten very quick in and out of his breaks. But part of that's because he's so mechanically sound. There's no wasted motion. There's an efficiency. So he learns the position really well. He understands how to fight for position when the ball's in the air. That's not something you can test for. That's a hard thing to put on paper and critique, or categorize is a better word even. So he deserves immense credit, not because he was doubted and overlooked and all that stuff, but because he has found these little ways to be great. And you add up all these little ways, and you have one of the truly, I mean, he's probably a Hall of Famer if he retires today, would you say?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I think so. I think he's been the best receiver in the league for, what, 4 or 5 years now, so.
Yeah, I think he's just absolutely remarkable. It's the quickness. If you want to put a physical trait on it, it's his quickness in and out of breaks that makes him so hard. But that's just an element of his game. And your point about what he did in that Jaguars playoff game perfectly illustrates that. That's honestly shaped some of my thinking and perspective. It's clarified a lot for me. He wins in a lot of different ways. He does every little thing you teach a wide receiver to do, and he does it better than they teach you to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And Antonio Brown and Michael Bennett are the two guys who, like, all time worst pre draft workouts, which is why they got drafted or didn't get drafted where they were. And, those two guys end up having Hall of Fame type careers. But let's go to the lightning ish round now. Andy, who leads the league in receptions in 2018?
That's almost the way the game's set up now. That's just a function of offensive styles anymore. That's just who's going to. Oh, so you want me to answer it still?
Yes. You can't get away from this one. It's the lightning round.
Yeah, I don't like the lightning round. I'll probably still say Antonio Brown in that
there
offense.
You go.
In part because he'll get three or four of those quick wide receiver screens. If they don't get him the ball early, then especially coming out after halftime, there's a deliberate effort to throw him those wide receiver screens to get his touches up.
Okay. I'll go with Antonio Brown, too. True or false, Davante Adams is a legit number one receiver in Green Bay.
He's legitimately their number one receiver.
Yes.
He's not in our top 10. I said the top 8 guys are true, bona fide number one. To me, a number one receiver is someone who influences the defense no matter where that receiver lines up, snap after snap. I don't think Adams is quite to that yet, but he's the guy that opposing teams' number one corners traveled with certainly every week. They rolled the coverage to him. He's who you focus on with that Green Bay passing game. But remember, every passing game, you're going to focus on somebody.
Yes.
You're not going to very often go into a game. Unless you're playing the Bears last year, you're not going to say, well, we'll just line up and play. We don't need to worry about who's at wide receiver. You're not going to do that.
I was going to ask, because I would have said false to this. I do like Davante Adams, but not as as sort of what Jordy Nelson was in this offense 3 or 4 years ago. Do you think defense is focused on him, or is it going to be Jimmy Graham? Who's going to keep them up at night?
It'll be Adams.
Yeah?
It'll be Adams. Yeah, it'll be Adams. Teams are terrified of getting beat over the top by a big play. That's at the end of it, that's what scares everybody the most, and you guard against that. Graham's not going to run away from you. Adams can.
More catches in Kansas City, Sammy Watkins or Tyreek Hill?
Tyreek Hill, kind of for the Antonio Brown reason, they'll get him some quick catches. The extended handoffs that count as a catch, so for taking this in a literal sense. But then Tyreek Hill's better than Sammy. I'm surprised he didn't get closer to our discussion of top 10 receivers, Tyreek Hill, that is. He's a better player than Watkins. He became a very good receiver last year, and he was a true wide receiver. They didn't use him on the gadgetry as much last season.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, we talked Odell and Julio contract situations at the top of this. They have Chiefs have something interesting going on here with what they're going to do with Tyreek Hill going forward, and I wonder if they're sort of looking at, you know, he's a guy, he fell in the draft because he had the domestic violence conviction coming in, and will the Chiefs kind of bank that no one will touch him if he hits the open market, and therefore they'll get him, not only did they get him later in the draft than they would have, but they'll get him on a cheaper deal than they would have.
They're not going to bank on that, and the reason why is the harsh, blunt truth that nobody talks about that domestic violence thing anymore. I'm not going to say it's forgotten, but that is rarely brought up with Tyreek Hill. It's, oh, look how fast he is, which is exactly what the Chiefs were hoping for, and that's a credit. I mean, I don't want to call it a credit to Hill, but look, that's the best-case scenario moving forward from where he came from for the Chiefs and for Tyreek Hill, if we're talking pure football.
Yes. All right, Andy, who's your breakout receiver for 2018?
I'm going to make you answer it first so I can stall and think about it further, even though that's not how lightning rounds work.
It really isn't. So
you're not prepared either for this question.
No, I also and my laptop battery just died, so I can't even frantically Google right now. I'm on my slow iPhone
I'll give you one who already broke out and whose numbers might actually not be much greater because they just traded for a true number one there, and this is in Los Angeles. But I think Cooper Kupp's going to be a very important player for the Rams for two reasons. One, he's a big part of the designs in that offense, and that is a highly schemed offense. Even if Sean McVay doesn't want you to say that because he wants his players to get the credit, and they will this year because they already did last year with guys winning awards. But now that Brandon Cooks is there, they do have some just genuine playmakers. We're better than you. We're going to line up and play type of guys. But they win a lot with timing and rhythm and design. McVay does a great job of that, and Cooper Kupp as a slot guy is a big part of it. And then with Tavon Austin now gone, he was not a significant contributor for touching the ball in Los Angeles, but he was a huge part of their misdirection stuff, their jet sweeps. They used him a lot as a decoy. I think Kupp will be the one who ultimately fills that role, and that's going to make him that much more valuable to the Rams. So break out in a pure football sense, but I'm not saying go draft him in the first round of your fantasy draft.
I want to say Devontae Parker just because I love how every year he's
about like
to break
one.
Out. But I mean if you're looking for a guy who's just a true draw the coverage number one type of guy, I mean that's your guy in Miami. So I will say him, even though I don't believe it in my heart. I'll convince myself in my mind.
They essentially chose Parker over Landry. That's what they did, and I know they felt at times, and this will baffle people. They thought Parker is a potentially better screen player than Landry because Parker is a limited mover, and so his inclination is to just get north and south, which is what you want, versus Landry, who can kind of dance around and look dazzling. But that's not always what you want on these screens. You want a guy to catch a ball and gain the yards. And so I like the Parker pick. I'm not at all surprised that they picked him up as a fifth-year option.
That was also kind of him at Louisville. That's what Parker did. He was very good catch and run because he runs through tackles. He gets going upfield. But
I like your Parker pick more than my Cooper Kupp pick for that
question.
There
you go. Maybe we'll trade when we're off air. But that's going to do it for this one. Thanks, as always, to producer Shelby Royston, all the guys at Cadence 13 to make us sound so good. Thanks to our researcher this week, Colin Bowers, making us sound smart. And thanks to our sponsor, OneBlade. Please support them the way they support our show. But most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MFQB 10 Things podcast. We'll have the mailbag show about a month from now. Or if you just want to drop us a line, give us a critique on the show, please do. We're both on Twitter, Andy_Benoit, G_Grambling_SI. Talkback at themmqb.com. Put podcast in the subject line if you want us to see it. Or we're both on Facebook. And really, we love hearing from you. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archive Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB Podcast with Albert Breer. And, of course, this show, the MMQB 10 Things Podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.